This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is the Lombardi Line, about as good as a Monday as you can hope for, with the NBA regular season ending with a bang. We had another majestic Masters weekend in the books, 10 days away from the NFL draft. So much to get to as we welcome you into the program. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Michael, you know we got to start with Scottie Scheffler winning the Masters. How much did you enjoy watching that unfold at home this weekend?
You know, I love his quiet confidence, his demeanor. You know, I think sometimes we think the emotional outburst are the reasons why, but he was so competitive in a quiet manner and driven by his kindness and his sense of flow. Like, I just was really in awe of watching the guy. Like, his, you know, the way he interacted with the crowd. You know, he missed the shot. He didn't react, whereas DeChambeau was it was always somebody else's fault why he hit a bad shot. I just, to me, he's what a great player represents. You know, he played within himself. I marvel at his ability to focus and concentrate. It was fun to watch. He was sensational. I mean, everything that the numbers said that he was great at doing, greens to in regulation, ball striking, all those things. I mean, it was just an impressive thing to watch. It really was.
Yeah, the tee to green numbers are insane for him. But you're right, he's so stoic out there, which I think is why it's so nice at the end when he is getting the green jacket and walking away and he finally wins it. He shows that emotion afterwards that it really is a big moment for him. His second green jacket, of course, in the last 3 years, made 7 birdies in the final round Sunday, pushing him to 11 under for the tournament, a 4-shot win. There's only been, Michael, 3 pre-tournament favorites at the Masters that have gone on to win, like Scottie Scheffler did at plus 450 in this case. Tiger Woods and Fred Couples. So as if he wasn't already, you know, at the top of his game right now, joining names like that just continues to show the significance at the level that he's at right now.
And don't kid yourself. You know, when we did the Stormfront on Thursday, I think it was, or Wednesday, whatever day we did that, you said don't get crazy, you know, betting too many long shots because Scheffler's going to be hard to beat. And you were dead on right. And he was. I mean, the fact that, you know, when he turns the first 9 at, you know, -8, and then starts at -9 on the second, you know, and then you think, okay, he's going to flip a little bit with the bogey at 11, but boom, right back at 12 with makes a great putt. And then next thing you know, he gets wins going away. To me, I think Nance captured it really well. And he said it in the interview, Scheffler, when Scheffler said the iron shot at 9. Remember the day on Saturday, he had an iron shot a little bit left of where he was on the fairway, mm-hmm. and he hit a bad shot and didn't make birdie there. But this iron shot at 9 on Sunday was incredible, and he got it within a tap in for birdie. That was the first iron shot that Scheffler even admitted that was really dead on to the pin. And once he got that going, wow, then all of a sudden everything else came into play, and he was playing pinpoint golf.
He's won now 3 of his last 4 starts, Arnold Palmer, Players, and now the Masters. Top 5 in 6 of his 9 starts on tour this season, which doesn't include a top 6 that he had at Pebble Beach. He tied for 10th at the Genesis. So he's been top 10 in every event but 1 on the tour this season. It's really just like Scheffler versus the field at this point. And as we look ahead to the PGA Championship at Valhalla next month, Scheffler is again the prohibitive favorite at 4-1 on DraftKings right now. His plus 450 pre-tournament odds for the Masters were also the shortest odds by any major winner since Tiger won the U.S. Open in 08. And this is a stat I found on ESPN Sports and Information Group this morning, Michael, that I just thought really encompassed how great Tiger was at his prime, because we're seeing what Scottie Scheffler is doing as a world number one and the way that he's dominating events right now. Scheffler not only joins Tiger as the only players with multiple master wins while ranked as the world number one, they're also the only that, as ranked as the world number one, had multiple major wins. Scheffler now has 2. Tiger had 11. Like, and I know that this weekend, obviously, it was so unfortunate to see the way that Tiger's body just couldn't hold up into the weekend. He made the cut. It was fun to watch. But I think having to play those 23 holes on Friday took too much of a toll on the body moving forward. And obviously, it just 16 over, it wasn't his day. But when Tiger was at his peak, to think about just how dominant and how strong he was, that these are the only 2 guys that have done that as world number ones. Tiger has 11 and Scheffler has 2. Unreal.
It's amazing, right? And it's sad to watch a great once. It's like watching a great boxing champion that struggles to fight, you know. And unfortunately, Tiger has the competitive stamina. His skill set just doesn't match. And that competitive stamina has translated into Scheffler. I mean, you would never think that he's won as much as he's won. He has that quiet confidence and that urge to continue. And he can double down. And I just think, to me, there's something about his mental makeup. His parents should take a lot of pride in him because he is an incredible person just watching him and that competitive spirit that he has. But I also thought that Ludwig Åberg was great, too. And yeah, we got to give a shout out to Harry on Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Harry was all over. Now, we know he was in Barcelona doing what he should be doing in Barcelona, going to see a Springsteen concert, which you can't go wrong doing that. Not only did he see Steven Spielberg, not only did he see Barack Obama, not only did he see Tom Hanks in the lobby of the hotel where naturally Harry was staying, he also got the tip of the Åberg. Yep. I mean, you know, and that was a great play by Harry. You got to give him that one.
Who would have thought, Michael, that the football show would have so many winners this week? I mean, we got Harry hitting there on Åberg. Our storm warnings have been going well. Like, we're on a nice little storm warning run here. It's making me a little nervous. I don't know if this can last. That was a cool story.
Well, we got the NBA. We have the NBA playoffs, which will, because you have to throw out the regular season when you get to the NBA playoffs. So who knows what's going to happen here?
So let's shift gears and get into that, because it was a chaotic final day in the NBA regular season. The playoff picture is laid out now with the main seeds locked in. The play-in is going to take place over the next 2 days. Let's start here in the Western Conference, because OKC entered Sunday in a three-way tie with the Nuggets and Timberwolves, end up locking in the top seed in the Western Conference, becoming the youngest one seed since seeding began in 1984. Their average age, just under 24 years old. SGA is their oldest starter, and he's 25. But they went from having the number two overall pick to being the one seed in 2 years, Michael, a remarkable turnaround for them. Yet they are third on the odds board to win the Western Conference still. Are they getting a little disrespected here? How do you view this team?
Well, I think, you know, what we see in college basketball is that experience matters, right? The older this team, the team that has age and older players beats the younger team. Oakland beats Kentucky, right? And so we see how this goes. But I think it matters, too, in the NBA playoffs, where it's become a much more physical game. You're not getting calls. But let's not disrespect the Thunder and what Sam Presti has done here. He's everything that I wanted the 76ers to do when they announced they were going to do the tanking, right? You know, he didn't try to lose. He didn't build a culture of losing. He tried to win. He drafted really well, made no mistakes on the draft, took a lot of bad contracts, flipped them into draft picks, and then hit on those draft picks. And this is where you are. You see, when you say the word process, it's great. It sounds wonderful. But it takes somebody with skill to pick the players. And this is this Thunder team is a tribute to Presti's ability to pick and build together a team. And I marvel at it. I really do. But again, they are young. There's no question they are young. And it's going to be hard to beat the Nuggets in a 7-game series because of their experience. But give all the credit to them and the Timberwolves, too. You know, the Conley goes up there and signs, makes the trade. And, you know, now all of a sudden he's got two big men on his team. Can this really work with Rudy Gobert? You know, I just think, to me, the West is so interesting. And that 4-5 matchup with the Clippers and Maverick is going to be must-watch television.
Yep. So Clippers, Mavs in the 4-5, Timberwolves, Suns in the 3-6. OKC and the Nuggets will have to wait for the play-in to see who their respective first-round opponents are. The Nuggets will get the winner of that 7-8 game between the Lakers and Pelicans. The loser of that game plays the winner of the 9-10, and then that winner gets OKC. The defending champion Nuggets, plus 135 to repeat in the Western Conference, followed by the Clippers, who I just basically think are the NBA's version of the Ifers, because if they are healthy and continue to play like a certain way, then yes, of course they can beat anybody, but we'll see what we ultimately get there. And then in the Eastern Conference, Michael, it feels like the Celtics against everybody else. Giannis and the Bucks limping into the playoffs. They lost 8 of their last 11 games. Their star is dealing with a calf injury. So a lot of people are asking about those 76ers, Michael, and even though they have to come up through the play-in, could they be the biggest competition for Boston?
I think the game Wednesday night might be the biggest game of the 76ers' career, really, of this process era. And I don't say that lightly either, Stormy, because if they get the seventh seed and play the Knicks without Julius Randle, they can play the Knicks and they can advance and they can have a they can go far and perhaps meet the Celtics in the conference championship. If they lose and have to play the Celtics or have to then play the Bulls or the Hawks, and they can win those games. But if they lose and they have to be the eighth seed and then they go play Boston in the first round, I don't see much hope for that at all. And so to me, this is why this season really comes down to this game. And as big of a game was yesterday, you know, the 76ers sent a message out to everybody. We know this is a big game, but we can beat Brooklyn without them. We need them Wednesday night. I think there's a ton of pressure on Embiid. I think there's a ton of pressure on the organization. If they can't beat the Heat at home in this one winner gets the seventh seed, then it puts them in a really tough spot moving forward in terms of trying to find a way to win. And anytime they play the Heat, and I know JVT would not agree with me, but the Heat just out-tough them every time.
The Heat getting 4.5 points in that game against the 76ers coming up on Wednesday. Total 207. Sixers have won 8 straight since the Joel Embiid coming back from that injury. The Heat, meanwhile, of course, made the finals last year coming out as the 8 seed. So we'll see how things play out there. It's the Knicks in the 2 for the first time in a decade. The Bucks, of course, occupied that 2 seed largely all season long. Yet Jalen Brunson on a remarkable run that he has been on. We'll see how the Knicks can fare as well. The Celtics, a -175 favorite to win the Eastern Conference. We're going to hit our first break of the day when we come back, getting into a little NFL and draft conversation. We're just getting started on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make sure to head over to the new and improved VSiN.com when you have a moment. Check out all the best bets from our VSiN hosts and experts, our betting splits pages, odds by states, and exclusive articles, including one up right now from our own Michael Lombardi, talking about where most mock drafters get it wrong when looking at quarterbacks in the NFL draft, the risky proposition that it can be drafting quarterbacks in round one. Again, available at VSiN.com right now as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line. And I think that's a great transition to what we're going to talk about here, Michael. We're going to continue our preview of the NFL draft, but by division, essentially, in what teams should be doing, what we expect them to do, especially as it pertains to that first round selection. And let's start in the AFC East with the New England Patriots. As we, you know, start with this quarterback question, everybody is anticipating that with the number 3 overall pick, that's where they go, is at quarterback. J.J. McCarthy reportedly had dinner with Patriots brass on Sunday ahead of his visit to One Patriot Place today. They already had visits with Jaden Daniels and Drake May. Saw a report that Elliott Wolf is reportedly pushing for J.J. McCarthy. So a lot to kind of dive into here as it pertains to the Patriots. What's your initial thought for where they go at number 3?
Well, look, they have one quarterback on the roster. They, you know, everything goes back to your depth chart when you're dealing with the draft and not listening to the noise. So it goes back to the depth chart, and they have one quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, on that depth chart. Yeah, I know they have Bailey Zappe, but that's not going to last for long. They know Bailey Zappe is not an NFL starter or even a backup. So they need a quarterback. They need a left tackle really badly too. I mean, that's the other huge concern for the team. Trent Brown, you know, they were counting on him last year. He didn't play well. You know, he signed a very mediocre contract with the Bengals because he didn't play well last year. So they're going to have to fix that. And I think where Elliott is could be at a situation where if he doesn't get the quarterback, he knows he's not getting one in the second round. So what's he do, right? What does he do? He has to pick one. And I think it's going to come down to whether he likes May or what does he like J.J. McCarthy. I think it's really probably, knowing Elliott as well as I do, there's no way anybody knows what he's thinking in terms of what quarterback. You got to understand his lineage from his dad, Ron, who was the general manager of the Packers, who trained Elliott. You know, Elliott's a size speed guy. That's what we all are when you work for the Raiders. You kind of come up in that system. And so somebody who's big and fast and can play the position, I think certainly he would like him. And I think a lot of it's going to come down to the coaching staff and how they see this quarterback. I think he's going to involve them. Because you can't draft a quarterback the 3rd pick overall and not have everybody completely signed off. And it can't be the phony sign off that like was going on in Chicago when they drafted Mitchell Trubisky, where people said they were in, but they really weren't. You got to get complete buy-in.
Well, if you talk about size and speed, that's probably a big reason why Drake May is the odds-on favorite in the market right now to go number three overall, minus 125. J.J. McCarthy, plus 200. Jaden Daniels, plus 220. And then the odds fall off a cliff outside of the quarterback market with Marvin Harrison Jr. there at 20-1. So we can ex-nay that because the anticipation is that obviously they're going to go with the quarterback. Or there's been talk, too, Michael, that like Elliott Wolf might be trying to stockpile picks and there's potential that other teams might be trading up. Do you think that they would be willing to find a dance partner to trade out of that spot? Is that realistic at all?
I do think it's realistic. I don't know if the offers will be what he wants, but then what is, you've got to answer. So then he trades down and he could get a wide receiver and a tackle. That's great. You know, but when does he get his quarterback, right? When does he get that? I think a lot of it comes down to, and this is the week where everybody makes a lot of the horizontal decisions, you know, and the horizontal decisions are, do we take the left tackle or do we take the defensive tackle? Do we take the corner or do we take the receiver that have the same grades on the horizontal platform? So I think ultimately that's kind of where they have to decide. If they trade it down, certainly they could fill two needs very well, a wide receiver and offensive tackle, which is what they need. But then they're left with no quarterback.
And it's the most important position on the field. In the division, they are the longest shot, 25-1, win total sitting at 4.5. We'll see what they can put together in year one under Jerod Mayo. How about the Jets? Both the Jets and Dolphins, both at 2-1 in the division. Jets get to select at number 10 in this year's draft. Where things sit right now on the odds board for the position that they take, offensive line and tight end are both there as the favorites. O-line plus 120, tight end plus 140, because there's been a lot of talk about the Jets taking Brock Bowers there at that number 10 position. What do you think is the more important spot for me? Like, I think it would be ridiculous for them not to go offensive line, given the injury-prone people that they have in those roles.
Well, the Ifers need offensive linemen. And look, they've got pick 19. They've got pick 52. They got 83, 99. So they've got four picks in the top 100. And if they pass an offensive tackle at 10, they're not going to get one at pick 52. See, this is the issue you get into. You could take Bowers. Now, if he's graded so significantly higher than everybody else, you have to take him. But my sense of it is at pick 19, where they're picking, they're going to have a hard time turning down a tackle. Really going to have, they're going to have a hard time when they pick. I have the wrong team there. I was looking at the Rams. I apologize. I have it right in front of me here. The Jets, you know, where they turn out, by the time they get to the second round, there won't be a tackle left. And so they've got to pick that. Their second pick, is 72. They picked 10 and 72. There's no lineman going to be there at 72 that you can plug and play. So that's, to me, the dilemma. That's why I think you're reading a lot about we want to trade down, because I think they want to try to get more. They want to get that second round pick that they gave away that they sent to the Packers. So for me, I truly believe that they have to address the offensive line. I'm with you. The tight end would be a nice pick, but he better be significantly highly graded than all these good tackles that are in this draft.
Well, and that's the point in my brain, is that that's supposed to be one of the deepest groups, if not the deepest, in this entire draft, is that offensive line and the tackle position. So if you can get somebody great at 10 versus another toy for Aaron Rodgers in the receiving game, I think that would be the more valuable asset. Offensive line is an odds-on favorite for the Miami Dolphins to use their first-round pick at number 21 as well, followed by a D-line edge at plus 200. What's the most immediate Miami need for you, continuing up there up front?
Oh, they got to get offensive linemen. I mean, it's all been a patchwork. I mean, they're like a tire that went flat and they got about four patches on the tire. I mean, they got to fix that really bad. And again, you know, they pick at 21. They don't pick again till 55. Where are they going? Now, they're trying to have this conversation with Beckham. Don't you love how this is going? You know, Beckham won't take the offer because it's not enough money. So, you know, they're going to cave and give him more money. Tua's not going to come to camp because he's in the middle of a contract, which they picked up his fifth year. You're really not in the middle of a contract, right? So anyway, they'll overpay that contract. But I think they need offensive linemen, right? They lose Hunt. They've lost Hunt down to Carolina. They've lost him. They need pass rushers, especially if Chubb and Phillips aren't 100% healthy. Van Ginkel went to Minnesota. But to me, it's pretty clear. It's got to be offensive line.
Miami has a lot of problems. It feels like, which is crazy because they were off to such a hot start and we were giving them all these glowing reviews and just the way that the season fell off for them and the defensive injuries they have, the players that they lost on that side of the ball, a lot that they're going to have to shore up going into 2024. And lastly, let's talk about the Buffalo Bills here at pick 28, Michael. They're plus 160 favorites to repeat and win the division once again. But because of the loss of Stephon Diggs as he moves on to Houston, wide receiver now is a minus 280 favorite for them to use that first round pick on. Sound about right to you?
Yeah, I mean, now they've got 10 picks, right? They go 26 and then they go 60. So
28.
They're not like,
I think they're 28.
That's 60 pick, 28, I'm sorry, and then they go 60. So that's like, you know, when you look at the value chart on that, you know, it's hard to take 60 and move up. It really is. So that's how you have to, everybody says, well, they want to try to trade up. Okay, great. You want to try to trade up. And when you look at the trade chart and you say, okay, pick 60 is worth 300 points. It's hard to get up from 28 at 640, you know, to get into the 900s, to get into 1,000, you know, that gets you up to 16. You could do it, but you're going to have to make sure you're the only team. So the value of what to do to get up is a lot harder, but I agree. They need a receiver. There's no question. They can continue to improve their offensive and defensive lines. I think that's going to be because no team suffered more losses in the free agency pool. This is a different team that we're going to see in Buffalo next year, especially defensively, safeties, the defensive front. I know they brought Daquan Jones back, but it's going to be a little challenging, but I could see them trying to, but it's hard when you have that low second round pick, not worthy as much as because it's the 60th overall. It's like a third.
You think they're still the rightful favorite in the division right now?
I do because they have the best quarterback, right? They have the best quarterback. And until that's disproved, because he can kind of carry the team and they ran the ball more effectively last year. And look, they're still a 12 team and they could beat with Kincaid and Dawson Knox in the tight end. They're good. I mean, they need another receiver. But look, they were having so many problems with Diggs. They just gave Diggs away. They didn't want him in the building. And when you don't want a guy in the building, you're saying, you know, you're better off without him than you were with him.
Yeah, that get him out of the building trade you always say is the worst one that you can make. And I hope you know you're going to have Jets fans coming for you now with that. They've got the best quarterback in the division.
Oh, yeah.
Thing you said there as we go away. We have to hit
them. They come out the time. Well, they ought to come after me with these new uniforms. I mean, how many ever years we're going to have new uniforms for the Jets? I mean, seriously.
Oh, too good.
How about Woody saying we do what our fans want? We do what our fans want. All your fans wanted Robert Saleh back, too. Why didn't you do that?
We'll be right back. Thomas Gable joining us coming up next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time here at VSiN, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer at VSiN.com/splits again to claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Stormy Bonantoni and Michael Lombardi with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Time to welcome in great friend of the show like we do every Monday, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. And I want to start with the Masters here, TG, because I'm very curious how bettors approach Scottie Scheffler this week, who obviously wins and puts on his second green jacket in 3 years. But being such a short favorite, usually in golf, we try to look for those long shots. We try to find those edges in the outright market. He wins again. How much were people betting Scottie this weekend, or was your liability elsewhere?
No, it's a great question. Great points by you, because that's exactly when you look at what happened. When you have a favorite that short in 4-1, 5-1 range, somewhere in there, which we really haven't seen since Woods was really in his heyday. But when you get a favorite at that price for a full field event, and then you can make the argument maybe the Masters isn't necessarily a full field event because you certainly have guys teeing it up that don't really have a chance of winning legitimately. But it's still, it's very prohibitive for a lot of bettors to invest money at that number at 4-1, 4-1 or 5-1, just is. So we saw, you know, certainly people are taking shots at other golfers in the field who have better odds, a better return on investment. Nobody really wanted to invest their dollars on somebody where you're only going to get 4-1 back. So it was a big win for the book. I'll say that with Scheffler winning it. You know, in terms of the right, we write more in matchups than we do on the overall winner pool. So the matchups worked out very well overall for us. But yeah, I mean, when you have a favorite that's short, it's just, you definitely have people who bet will come in and, you know, maybe put $20 down, $30, but not the serious bettors. They're looking for a better return elsewhere. And, you know, with Scheffler in the form that he's been in, I think some people were questioning the price. I think he was priced obviously correctly. He won this very comfortably yesterday. And, you know, I don't want to get into, you know, a Tiger comparison at this point. You know, what Tiger did in his prime is head and shoulders away from where Scotty is at this point. I don't want to take anything away from Scotty, but Scotty has a long way to get to that. But he's well on his way, winning his second green jacket yesterday. He already won the Players earlier this year. So, listen, we've seen guys get hot before in the year since Tiger. But Scotty has that complete game, tee to green. Obviously the putter is really the only concern when it comes to Scheffler. It's really just, is the putter working? And he was just fine this week and, won it comfortably. So congratulations to him. And I know he's certainly, he has his mind elsewhere, is with his child on the way and, coming soon. So, Good for him. I mean, this is just probably a fantastic time of his life.
Yeah, you know, and it's amazing what he was able. There was a time where he was 5-1 on the betting on the tournament play, but obviously when he kept making birdies, that went away. I want to shift gears and go to the NBA here because I said earlier on the show, TG, I think Wednesday night's game might be the biggest game in 76ers. Joel Embiid, the process history, because if they can't beat Miami and secure the 7th seed and face the Knicks, and they become the 8th seed if they're able to beat the Bulls or the Hawks, whoever the winner is in that game, and then they face Boston and you can eliminate them, and, you know, then they're out, and then all of a sudden it's a horrible season. What are you getting in terms of play on the game? I know the line opened at 4.5, but what are you getting on this game?
Yeah, we're still 4.5. It's been all Sixers money here since we opened it. No surprise. I mean, it's all casual money, local money coming in on the Sixers. But listen, I think you're right, Michael. I think if you lose this game and you have to go in then and play the winner of Bulls Hawks, even if you win that, I mean, your reward now is the Celtics. And I guess the question then is, if you do go in there now as the 8th seed and face Boston, if you're Philly, and you have Embiid back and hopefully healthy for the series, and you do bow out, at that point, I think you need to have some serious conversations around the building in Philadelphia. What are you going to do moving forward, right? Because Maxey obviously is a cornerstone there now, a tremendous season for him. Oubre's playing very well at the moment. And, you know, if you lose to the Celtics in the first round, you can say, all right, well, you can point to, all right, well, we weren't seeded. If we had Embiid healthy all year, we obviously would have had a better seed. But bottom line is you're still going to, the East still runs through Boston. And that goes for any team out there. So if if you're in Philly, do you say, hey, it's time to move on now from Embiid because we haven't been able to do anything with him?
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. How about these play-in games in the Western Conference? What are the numbers you have out there, and how is it getting played in Lakers, Pelicans, and Warriors, Kings?
Yeah, so the Lakers game, I think the favorite is going to flip here probably before game time. The Pelicans are still favored by a point in the market, but Lakers are getting bet, and I would not be surprised to see this game either go off as a pick 'em or even the Lakers as a 1-point favorite. In the later game there, the Warriors are 2.5-point favorite right now. And we've seen Warriors money early here. Also, the under has been getting bet in that one. But again, I think for the Lakers here, this is if they win, if they beat the Pelicans, now you're facing Denver, right? You're the seven seed, and you're facing Denver, who fell into the two seed. And we know that the Lakers do not match up well with Denver at all. So it's almost like one of these things for the Lakers. Maybe losing this game to the Pelicans isn't the worst thing in the world. Yes, I know you'd have to then go and face the winner of in the Golden State game and the Kings. So you're looking at a potential first round matchup with OKC, but I think that's a much better matchup for the Lakers than Denver is. Denver just, you know, we've seen this play out before with LA, and it's just the matchups on the court just do not favor LA in that whatsoever.
How about the one that I'm most fascinated with is Stormy renamed them the Los Angeles Ifers, the other team in Los Angeles. The Clippers should be the Ifers like the Jets, because if they're healthy, they're good. You know, but the Mavericks are playing really well right now. I mean, how do you have this game handicapped?
Well, I think this series is pretty much a pick 'em. And as you said, Dallas is playing very well. Now, the Clippers, when they're healthy and they have Kawhi in there and available every game, a completely different team. So this, I think I'm with you. I think this is probably the most fascinating series that's on the board right now. Whether East or West, I'm really fascinated with this series overall, just because of the way that the Mavericks have been clicking. Doncic is obviously playing at a very high level, and you're going against the big three there of the Clippers. So I think it's an even series. It should be a great watch overall. And when you look at the futures in the Western Conference, you know, those two teams are pretty much priced right around the same, around that 7-1, 8-1 range to come out of the West. But I think either one of these teams, whoever wins out of this series, is going to be dangerous there.
Notice with the Clippers, TG even started his answer with also saying if. Last thing here, 45 seconds, TG. I know you guys don't have NFL prop bets up yet for the draft, but are you going to? Yep. Or what's the general thought process and strategy behind that?
Yep. We will offer, obviously, NFL draft markets. We'll be putting them up as the week progresses here. It's something that we just tend to wait on. To me, there's no real necessity to put these things up early with the draft. Not something that we enjoy doing, but we know people enjoy betting it. So, those markets will be up as the week progresses here. So, it's one of those things that everybody loves to get into every year.
Yeah, I'm sure it's challenging being an information-based market versus what we're used to in normal day-to-day sports. TG, you're awesome. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, TG.
That's Thomas Gable. Follow him at TGableSports on X, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City. When we come back, we will talk a little more NFL draft and some of the markets available and bettor's choice. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code VSIN, V-S-I-N. New customers using the code BET$5 get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's the code VSIN, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Yes, the NBA regular season came to a close last night. Excited to have the playoff field largely set. The play-in taking place over the course of the next 2 days in the Western and Eastern Conference. We'll talk a little more basketball later on in the program. But back to the NFL, Michael, because we are 10 days away from that opening round of the NFL draft. And our wonderful producer, Elliot Bowman, has put together some of these bettors' choice, would you rather draft props head-to-head with similar pricing. And I was looking through these this morning. Some of them are really good. Starting with this first one, which I think is really intriguing in the draft position market. We're putting Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix head-to-head, Michael. Which of these two quarterbacks, both of which have been talked as first-round potential, would you rather bet to go under their position prop of 32.5? So to be a first-round pick, Michael Penix Jr. plus 110, Bo Nix plus 130.
I would go Michael Penix Jr. The only caveat here is we don't know the medical. And we'll hear a little bit more about the medical if he can pass. And there's some guys in this draft that might slide because of the medical, but I think, to me, Michael Penix is a very good third-level thrower. He doesn't play to his 4-6 time, but there's a lot to like about him. Bo Nix, you're going to have to fall in love with all the things he's capable of doing and project him forward. I don't see him. I wouldn't have graded him as a first-round talent. Same thing with Penix, but I think if I had to pick one, I would go with Penix over Nix.
I would agree with you 100% there. I do want to follow up on the medical side of this because I feel like a lot of people got excited kind of coming out of the NFL Combine that the medical checked out. But it's also important, right, for people to recognize that each and every team has their own medical personnel that's going to do their own evaluations.
Yeah, that's the real caveat that you have to be really careful with. For example, the Latu kid from UCLA, you know, he's had neck fusion surgery. Right. And he would be an easy top 10 pick and maybe because he's a really good rusher. He's better rusher than Tyree Wilson was last year coming out of Texas Tech. However, we don't know where the doctors are going to view that net. Whenever you get a neck fusion, it's always a concern. And can he be that? I don't know. But on tape, he certainly is a top 10 player. And that's the problem with Penix. We don't know what the medical is going to be with a lot of these different teams.
Next on the list, J.J. McCarthy's prop set at where he'll go is at 5.5 plus 140. Joe Alt, the great tackle out of Notre Dame, is set at 7.5 plus 180. Both of them predicted to go under that number, hence why you're getting the plus money price here. But which of these two scenarios do you think is most likely, and would you rather bet J.J. over 5.5 or Alt over 7.5?
I would rather bet JJ over the 5.5.
Really?
I think Alt goes at 5. Yeah, I think he goes to the Chargers, you know. So I think if I feel that way, I think this tackle, look, here's why I think it's really important. Nobody does this when they do mocks. They never put what's available if they pass a good tackle, right? Take that receiver in the first round. Well, we'll get a guard in the third. Well, there's no guards left in the third. You pass a tackle early in this draft. The Jets at 10 pass a tackle. They're not getting one at their next pick. So unless the guy's significantly higher rated, you got to do that. And that's why I think the tackles and the defensive linemen like Brian Murphy from Texas, he's going to go earlier than people think because he's a really good player. And he's a three technique, and those guys go. So I think Alt's a lock to go at 5 unless they feel like, you know, the Alabama kid Latham is better than him, which I don't know. I think Alt is, but I think that would be what I would do.
Okay. And it'll be interesting to see whether it is the Cardinals or the Chargers who trade out of the pick. Like, there's still a lot of questions to be figured out there. How about when it comes to the Chargers who are sitting there at 5, I feel like a natural transition is to go offensive line or wide receiver, because there have been a number of mocks that have had the Chargers picking a wide receiver. But based on your comments about Joe Alt, you make it seem like it should be a no-brainer offensive line. Minus 135 to use that first selection in the draft up front on the O-line, plus 135 for a wide receiver.
Yeah, they're not taking it. Even though they have the lowest payroll at receiver, 32nd in the league, I mean, they're going to draft receivers. I don't see them picking one at there. I think it'll be an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. I mean, that's what Jim's going to do. And he went out of his way to describe why the offensive line's so important. I think that's what it'll be there. And, you know, could he add more players down the road with some of the other picks? I think certainly he could. But I just don't think – I think whenever you get a chance to get a tackle, and what you don't want to do is be tackle poor. Mm. So he's got 537 and 69 and 105. He's going to get four of the top 105 players in the draft. And I promise you there'll be a receiver maybe in that top 105, but there's going to be two offensive or defensive linemen in that group too.
Well, and something I know we've talked about a lot is you can get a wide receiver that's really talented that'll pan out outside of the first round, right? Like you don't have to, even with how good this class is at the top in the wide receiver ranks this year, you can find those options elsewhere. Which team, Michael, would you rather bet to draft a quarterback with their first round pick? We have the Raiders at plus 230 or the Giants at plus 150.
I'm going to say Raiders here because I think if May's off the board, I don't know if the Giants go with McCarthy. Did you see Tiki Barber's comments on McCarthy? He was really, really hard on McCarthy. You know, he's not a first-round player. And Tiki has every right to. Look, we all have opinions, right? He went hard after him. And so I don't think Tiki would go that hard. Somebody at the Giants, he's talking to somebody in there. I'm not saying the Giants told him that, but I just have a feeling of that. But to me, I think it's May. And if they don't pick May, if May's gone at third, I think they'll pick a receiver or an offensive lineman where they're picking. So I would rather – and then the Raiders, I truly believe the Raiders are going to look to take a quarterback because I think they have to do that. This is their opportunity. They put all their money in Wilkins. They help their defense. They could use an offensive lineman, no question. Colton Miller's a good left tackle. They need other players in the line. But they could use – a guy like Penix would appeal to the Raiders.
The quote from Tiki that's kind of made the rounds is the McCarthy thing. I'm tired of hearing it. His film doesn't say he's a first round quarterback. And he said a lot of the things, honestly, I didn't go as hard. I don't think personally in our storm warning a couple weeks ago, but with JJ for me, like, I just think it's inflated. The hype around him is inflated. And Tiki Barber said as much. Let's stick with the quarterbacks because you talk about Drake May. He is minus 125 to be the number three overall pick. Marvin Harrison Jr. minus 175 to be the number four overall pick. Which of those wagers for you would you rather bet?
I think I'd rather bet May at three. I do. But, you know, Harrison's a really good. I know I keep saying Neighbors is rated higher, but Harrison's a really good player. He's big. When you see him physically, he's imposing. He's got size. He's going to play right away. He's got a pro style. He runs routes. Just Neighbors just brings a little different athleticism to the table in terms of vertical speed. My sense of it is I think May is going to go three just because I think the Patriots are going to see the upside in May and let Jacoby Brissett kind of make it through the 1 year and then go with their quarterback.
Is there any world with which you see Roma Dunze going ahead of Malik Neighbors? In this, would you rather Neighbors is minus 270 and Adunze plus 215 in the head-to-head?
You know, Randy Mueller today in The Athletic wrote that he had Adunze being the first receiver off the board. And I respect Randy and like Randy, and he's entitled. I don't see that when I watch Roma Adunze play. I see him being a possession type guy. He's a little bit like Michael Pittman, right? Michael Pittman went the top of the second. So you're saying, well, you don't like him. No, just you have to compare players to guys. He's a little bit, he's like Michael Pittman, kind of similar. He's not really going to vertically beat you down the field. Good player. Good player. Would he be a guy? Is he a number one receiver? No. It's like Drake London. Is he a number one receiver for Atlanta? No, but he went in the first round. So I think, whereas I think Neighbors is clearly a number one receiver.
Last one here before we hit the break. Which of these defensive player bets feels most likely to cash? Dallas Turner to be the first defensive player drafted at minus 110 or Quinyon Mitchell to be the first corner taken at minus 190?
I'm going to go Mitchell. I think Mitchell's going to go. I think Mitchell's well-liked by everybody in the league. And I think these defensive players are going to go earlier than me people think. You know, all these mocks are the same. Nobody, everybody's mock looks identical, right? There's no defensive players in there. And yet I know in all the all the coaches' rooms, they want defensive players. And there are some good ones. Look, when there's a dramatic shift change from offense to defense in terms of, you know, the talent level, you go there. But when there's a three technique like Murphy, or if there's a rusher like Lute, like Latte, I mean, you got to take those guys. They're hard to find.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good talent in this draft. I'm excited to see who and what translates. Quinyon Mitchell, though, despite coming out of Toledo, very, very highly regarded. Again, minus 190 to be the first corner off the board. We're resetting hour two of the Lombardi Line when we come back talking Masters and NBA postseason.